would you address the idea that the major food industries, including Monsanto and DuPont, are now enlisting people like Dr. Oz to champion genetic engineering or conventional factory farming and putting down the organic movement or those who are very conscientious? They're not trying to act like the 1%. They're being educated. They want their healthiest food into themselves and their children. Your response, please.
Well, Dr. Oz sounds so much like that fake Dr. Miller who pretends to be from Stanford University, who a few months ago put out a study which was called the Stanford University study, and it wasn't, and said it's the biggest peer-reviewed study showing organic has no benefits. And then you realize that he's looked at 200 papers, some of which were using two-day feeding trial results. So there's a lot of junk science out there. There's a lot of fake science out there. And sadly, people like Dr. Oz, who, if they've made a... I don't know him, frankly. I know you, Gary. I don't know this Dr. Oz, and I haven't read that Time magazine, but I will. And if he's actually promoting, in the name of health, GMOs and chemical farming, I'd like him to remember that today is the 28th anniversary of the worst industrial disaster that took place in the city of Bhopal in 1984 when a pesticide plant leaked. 3,000 people died immediately. If pesticides were safe, nobody would have died. 30,000 have died since then. But what is worse, and I was in Bhopal 2 days ago to give away awards that the victims have institutionalized for other movements fighting corporate crime. The hall was filled with children who have been crippled, who are spastic, who can't walk, who have been to be lifted by their parents, and who are being rehabilitated by other victims because the corporation never took its responsibility, and they said, we have no liability. And now Carbide is owned by Dow, and Dow is saying, we have no responsibility. The governments, which are now corporate states, are also doing nothing. But there's a cancer train that leaves the state of Punjab, which is the state of the Green Revolution. This is where the highest pesticide use takes place in India. The train that leaves is called the cancer train because most of the people on board that train are cancer victims going to a hospital for charitable treatment because an ordinary cancer treatment is unaffordable for any ordinary human being, particularly Indians. I have been practicing organic farming and promoting it in India for the last 25 years. And our fields show that you can grow more organic food than you can chemical food. Our research shows that GMO cotton hasn't actually increased yields. In spite of all the public relations studies, they should not be called science. They should just be called PR spin in the name of science. And our study, Health Per Acre, based on real farms, shows that biodiversity intensification produces more nutrition per acre, and our government appointed me chair for the next 5 years of planning for nutrition because we are realizing that growing nutrition is the only way. Now, 100% of all beings, including human beings, were organic till the war industry realized that in transforming war chemicals into agrochemicals, they could find a huge market. So explosive factories started to make nitrogen fertilizers, which are creating the dead zones you referred to, and the nitrate load, including the nitrogen oxides going into the atmosphere, 300 times more lethal in damaging the climate than carbon dioxide. Nobody talks about nitrogen oxide as a greenhouse gas. But all those herbicides, all those pesticides started as war chemicals. They were never meant to be applied to our food system. And war chemicals will function as war chemicals, as Bhopal showed us immediately. Let Dr. Oz come and talk to the people of Bhopal who are suffering till today, nearly 3 decades later after that disaster, and tell them pesticides are harmless.
Let's take a look at the difference between your research and sustainable agriculture, what you grow, the varieties you grow, what we used to have, what you used to have in India, how many varieties of rice and lentils and papaya and mango versus today, and what you've seen when people eat healthy and what you've seen when they eat commercial industrialized farm food.
Well, the first thing about the disappearance of diversity, under an agriculture designed for war chemicals rather than the soil, the earth, human nutrition, and human health, the first thing that disappears with agriculture that becomes like war is our biodiversity, because chemicals are intolerant to diversity. They need monocultures, and monocultures have made our rice varieties disappear. We used to have, according to Dr. Risharia, the leading scientist in rice, 200,000 varieties of rice. He's the one who taught me about seed saving. And because of that, Navdanya has been able to rescue 3,000 varieties of rice. We had 1,500 varieties of wheat, many of which rescued farming in Europe and Canada because they were frost tolerant. Research was done by Dr. Howard, who's known as the father of modern organic farming. Howard was sent to India to introduce chemicals, and when he came here, he found the fields were fertile, there were no pests in the fields, and as he says, I threw away my spray gun and decided to turn the peasant and the pest into my teacher. He then wrote the Agricultural Testament, which is what is called the Bible of organic farming. And Howard worked on Indian wheat, and he says these are so much more superior. Now, we are being told, our government's being told by the Del Montes of the world that our mangoes, 1,500 varieties of delicious mangoes, you know, the sherry, the kalmi, tasty off the tree, that they're not good enough. Why aren't they good enough? Because they don't travel well. But food wasn't meant to be put on ships and freezers and sit for 6 months in containers and in supermarket shelves. Food is meant to be harvested and eaten. So when a chemical model of agriculture takes over, it goes hand in hand with not just uniformity, but a standardization that is anti-health, anti-nutrition, anti-taste. When I travel, I normally eat food because food on airplanes is totally inedible. But they've managed to make fruit inedible. You can't eat the melons because they are like rocks. You can't eat the oranges because you can't open them. I mean, you're supposed to peel an orange. Now you need a slaughtering knife to go through your fruit. And that's because hardness is a virtue when food is supposed to only travel and not be eaten. Softness is the virtue if you eat fresh. We are seeing taste, quality, nutrition go. And with it, food has become a burden, a boring activity, whereas when food is delicious, and thank goodness we still have taste in India, and Navdanya, the organic movement, has started, we grow so much diversity, and then, of course, we eat it. It is such a treat to be at our farm, and the school I've started there for training called the Earth University. And this afternoon, I was at our cafe, our organic cafe in Delhi, having the most delicious millet pakoras. You can't get that taste in industrial food. But wherever there are non-industrial societies, A, you don't find diabetes, you don't find obesity, you don't find birth defects. Whereas wherever chemicals have entered and wherever industrial food has entered, you see the problems of obesity and you see the problems of diabetes, because these are not nutritious food, they're not balanced foods, they are pure mass, pure calories, pure energy, and the body is by being violated in a very serious way. Another very important aspect, especially because this so-called Mr. Oz, we should call him the Wizard of Oz, because he's managed to create miracles of turning poisons into healthy food, sounds so much like that Miller. one of the important parts of the industrial food system is that it creates hunger. My new book, which should be out in the United States in the spring, is called Making Peace with the Earth. And a large part of the book is an analysis of what I call hunger by design. The very design of industrial farming, the very design of industrial breeding of seed is to create hunger. First, it creates hunger by destroying the resources that give us food, the soil, the biodiversity, the water. Second, it creates hunger by locking farmers into debt. So farmers grow food, but they don't eat it because now it's a commodity. They're indebted. They sell what they've grown to pay back the debt for the chemicals and go hungry themselves. That is why of the 1 billion people in the world who are hungry, half of them are food producers. In India, of the 300 million who are hungry, half of them are producers of food. I have watched farmers growing rice, giving it to the person from whom they took credit to buy the chemicals. And of course, then the next step of this debt trap that is inevitable in a high-cost, high-input, chemical-intensive, non-renewable, patented seed, GMO seed culture, is when it happens too suddenly, as it happened with the BT cotton in India, farmers are absolutely dazed. They used to be well-to-do. Cotton was a cash crop. They weren't just ordinary farmers. They were well-to-do farmers. And before they know it, they're in a debt trap and they can't pay back because the seed costs have jumped 8,000%. The pesticide use has jumped 1,300%. And knowing they can't get out of this trap, they end up drinking pesticide to end their lives. 270,000 Indian farmers have committed suicide since the GMO cotton seeds were introduced into India. And Monsanto started to take over the seed supply and introduce hybrid seeds and non-renewable seeds. I have called this a genocide. But there's another level at which the violence takes place in this food system. What is being produced as commodities, not food. And recent data showing it very clearly. Only 2% of the soya bean growing in the U.S. is being eaten. And that too unwillingly, because people don't want to eat food with GM soya, except that they don't get labeling. If only 2% of the soya is being eaten, and most of it is going for animal feed and biofuel, Mr. Oz cannot claim that the industrial system is feeding the world. It's the small farms producing food with love and care that to date are providing 80% of the food eaten on the planet. They're the ones we should be respecting. And you were so right in saying it's Mr. Oz who is part of the 1% to destroy the 99%, when it is the 99% that is being exploited by the 1%, which is the seed industry, which is the same as the agrochemical industry, and it's the same as the pharmaceutical industry. So when they poison you and give you cancer, they then make money out of the patented cancer drugs. It is such a vicious cycle of power and reinforcement of power as the planet is destroyed, as people's health is destroyed, as our farmers are wiped out. It's the system we need to look at, and I think it's time to let the frauds who are speaking on behalf of Monsanto be exposed. I really want to make a chart, Gary. You know, the 20 faces that are Monsanto lobbyists one way or the other.
My final question, it deals with the European Union Food Safety Agency. They have now asked for no more studies. They don't want any more safety studies on GMOs. Because of the work that was done earlier, of course, that showed that GMO-fed animals, or rats in this case, developed massive renal cancers and renal carcinomas and ductal carcinomas. And as a result, they're saying the renal and the breast, I should say, they don't want any more of that. So they're pushing all over Europe. Now, we also found out from WikiLeaks that the State Department under Hillary Clinton has been threatening every country in the world who has not embraced our GM, genetically modified products and from Monsanto and DuPont, with threats that we will economically, you know, hurt them. And so now all over the world, countries are fearful if they don't accept genetically engineered food and accept that it's safe because someone at the FDA who used to work for Monsanto said it's safe, that their country will be adversely affected. Now, we wouldn't have known of all this behind-the-scenes skullduggery had it not been for WikiLeaks. But now is their official proclamation that they don't want any more research over there. Tell us about why they wouldn't want research. Tell us in a simple way, and especially Dr. Oz today, because it's an effort to reach out to him to share information he may not have been aware of. His wife certainly is, by the way. But tell us why Dr. Oz and the rest of the American media have been extremely remiss not doing their homework to find out why genetic engineered food, and of all types, is so dangerous.
Well, the two reasons why the so-called science-based system, which the biotech industry calls itself, why they're afraid of science. First, every claim of genetic engineering is based on a manufactured claim. We are going to produce more food. Nowhere have yields increased because of genetic engineering. They can't. Genetic engineering is merely a tool to transfer a gene. It is not a tool for breeding. It is not a tool for increasing yields of plants. That comes from the original planting material, whether it be an open pollinated seed or a hybrid. A second claim, this is going to reduce the chemical use. Around the world, chemical use has increased. Third claim, it's an accurate science. If it was so accurate, why would we have emergence of super pests? Why would we have emergence of super weeds that have overtaken 15 million acres in the United States? The second reason why they're so afraid of science is because now independent science is being done and is showing that, A, there's huge harm to the environment. We did a study on the soils of BT cotton and found in 4 years of planting, 22% of all beneficial soil organisms had been killed. Dr. Arpad Putsai did studies on potato, asked by the government of UK to do the study. And then the industry went after him because the study shows that there was harm, there brains had shrunk, the pancreas had expanded, the immunity had weakened. Seralini, there is such an attack on independent science because genetic engineering cannot coexist with truth, with independent science, and with democracy. And so we see in India, in the last few months, we had two very major reports from two institutions that are supposed to supervise government action. The first is the Parliament. The Parliament's Agriculture Committee did an analysis for 2 years by going to all parts of the country and talking to everyone, Monsanto included. And then their conclusion was GMOs have no role in a country like India with so much biodiversity and so many small farmers. The same hirelings of Monsanto, and I by now know all their names, write a letter to the Prime Minister to tell him to not listen to the Parliament when he's supposed to listen to the Parliament. The executive's supposed to be subjected to the Parliament. Our Supreme Court appointed a high-level technical expert committee to advise it on what should happen with GMOs and trials. And the technical committee of very high-level science, heads of government labs, including our leading molecular biology lab, our leading biodiversity expert, Dr. Ramakrishna, worked and gave a report to the Supreme Court saying that our regulatory system needs to be much more robust. It does not match with the challenges, so we need to develop much more of the impact sciences and the regulatory process. Until then, there should be a 10-year moratorium on GMOs. There should be no GM crop introduced in any crops of which we are the center of diversity. The same gang that had attacked the Parliamentary Committee was now attacking the Supreme Court Committee. It's the same gangsters who attack Proposition 37 on the right to know and the right to labor. So I've just written a column, and I'll be happy to send it to you, Gary. I talk about independent science as a species threatened with extinction. if GMOs spread, they must destroy democracy, they must destroy independent science, they must destroy the environment, and they must destroy our health, which is why we can't afford GMOs, besides the issues of the health risks and the particular issues of biosafety, but the larger systemic damage, a pathetic, petty industry producing something nobody wants, and something that will never spread if democracy works and independent science decides. They can't coexist. So we're going to either have food fascism and GMOs or food democracy and organic.
Well, that is happening as we speak, so it's going to play out, and it's going to be playing out right now, not in the future. I'm very pleased with the efforts of so many grassroots individuals in California. Even though we lost, we didn't lose by much, and I'm happy to say that in New York, Connecticut, Vermont, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, there is a massive movement underway at the grassroots level to try to get people to do a food labeling initiative here to get a referendum on the ballots so that we can vote on it in these areas. And learning what Monsanto did, learning about their lies and their deception and their manipulation, we will be better prepared how to deal with them when it comes to what goes on here. So I thank you very much. And by the way, the latest research on the deniers, and there are a lot of them, in the employee of the major media who simply know the truth and don't talk about it or don't want to know the truth because then they'd have to report on it. When it came to global warming and the impact of global warming, you hear this, oh, there's no consensus. Oh, it's still an open debate. So research was done by an independent group and found over 13,000 studies on global warming. And of those 13,000 studies, under 0.07%, under 0.7% agreed that there was no human impact upon global warming. All the rest agreed that there were. And that was from over, I think it was about 23,000 scientists. So we have the vast majority of scientists in the world saying global warming is real. Then how in the world was it picked up so that there was not a consensus and there was still openness? There wasn't. That's the media manipulation. And the media wouldn't allow itself to be manipulated or go along with this if it weren't for all the money used in advertising, all the think tanks, the scientists for hire who played along to get along and get benefits. So we have the actual statistics on that. So that nails that down. And now we simply need to do the same thing about genetic engineering.
Absolutely. And you should take the lead, Gary.
Well,
I'll provide you names.
Great. You provide them, and we will challenge them.
Yeah.
All the best, and thank you all very much for the good work
too.
Over there.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
My guest, Dr. Vandana Shiva. Her website, Vandana Shiva, SHIVA.org. And Navanya.org, NAVDANYA.